Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Wattier.
And I'm Tommy Welling, and you're listening to the Fasting for Life podcast.
This podcast is about using fasting as a tool to regain your health, achieve ultimate wellness, and live the life you truly deserve.
Each episode is a short conversation on a single topic with immediate actionable steps. We cover everything from fat loss and health and wellness to the science of lifestyle design.
We started Fasting for Life because of how fasting has transformed our lives, and we hope to share the tools that we have learned along the way. Hey everyone, wanted to hop on real quick before we get into today's episode and let everyone know that the next 7-day fasting lifestyle challenge registration link is live. You can go to the show notes, click the link for more details, or you can go to www.thefastingforlife.com/live. Wanted to speak directly to you if you've been listening to the podcast, maybe you're new and just getting started, or maybe you've been fasting for a while and really trying to adopt that lifestyle and the scale just won't move beyond that 2 to 4, 3 to 5 pounds each week, or maybe you feel like you've hit that dreaded weight loss plateau, or maybe the hunger, or as my wife likes to say, the hangriness has snuck up and bit you on the backside and you just can't seem to get away from those cravings, or the consistency of your fasting schedule just isn't allowing you to get back on track if you've fallen by the wayside. This 7-day lifestyle challenge is exactly for you. It's coming up in the near future. Please don't miss out on this opportunity. We are super excited to be leveling up this experience and leaving that diet baggage behind, giving you the confidence and the habits to build that long-term weight loss and fasting lifestyle success. Go to the show notes. You can click the link or www.thefastingforlife.com/live. We will hope to see you on the inside. And now to today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome to the Fasting for Life podcast. My name is Dr. Scott Wattier, and I'm here as always with my good friend and colleague, Tommy Welling. Good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Scott, how are you?
Fantastic, my friend. We are here for another episode. I am excited about today's episode too, because we are going to share some incredible stats, some eye-opening stats, tad scary at times, but then we're going to tell you by the end of the episode exactly what you can do to start reversing those processes and diabetes and pre-diabetes and those types of things. So we're going to talk fasting. We're going to talk some research. We're going to talk about an article that we saw on clevelandclinic.org, which I was so excited to see. And I think today is going to be an episode that's going to bring some value. So if you are new to the podcast, we want to welcome you in. If you want to learn more about our story and our journey with fasting and the Fasting for a Life mantra and who we are and what we do, feel free to go back to the first couple of episodes, listen, get to know us a little bit more, and then you've got a whole bunch of episodes in between that you can search for and pick and choose to get, you know, things that you are looking for on your fasting journey and get you some actionable things, which is the goal of every episode, to give you one or two things that you can do now, today, like as you are listening to us talk, wherever that is, however you're listening, you're going to be able to put something into your fasting journey today. I also want to welcome in the long-term listeners. Thank you guys for listening. Drop us a like, share, a follow, a review.
Subscribe.
We like the 5-star kind. Subscribe. There you go. Not exactly sure how to do all those things. I just know that when you do it, that tells the podcast gods that we're delivering value week to week, and we are much appreciative of you long-term listeners as well. So Tommy.
Thank you. Thank you.
Today's episode, I want to set the stage with some staggering numbers, and we've seen these numbers, and even just going pulling them up again about the state of the union here when it comes to blood sugar-related issues.
Always eye-opening.
It changed the state of the energy for this episode, right? Like, it just made me, like, sit on the edge of my seat, my adrenaline pumped up a little bit, like, get that tingly little nervous energy going. I'm like, all right, no, we need to share this. But more importantly, then, we need to talk about this dichotomy that exists in the research world, in the dietary guidelines world, and then also in this article that was on the Cleveland Clinic, that's encouraging, right? That fasting isn't living in the fringe anymore. But looking at these stats and what we know about them, because we just did a recent podcast episode about 8 of the top 10 causes of death and mortality here in the United States are related to insulin and blood sugar related issues, right?
Right.
So we want to start with the, okay, in order to get where you need to go, you need to know where your starting point is, right? You can't just hop in the car and start driving haphazardly around. If you're really trying to go east towards Florida here from Central Texas,
right?
You can't head west towards California and expect to get there. So
yeah, true story.
Where are we at? So this is from diabetes.org. And the statistics are, this is from 2019, stats about diabetes and prediabetes. 37.3 million Americans had diabetes.
Wow.
Only 1.9 million of that darn near close to 40 million were type 1.
Hmm.
So we're not talking about the early onset type 1 diabetics where you have a physiological, you know, issue with the production of insulin. We're talking about lifestyle-induced diabetes in the majority of these cases. Almost 40 million Americans.
Right.
Now, there's also another category here that this is the one that really kind of hit me in the gut, because this is where I was. I didn't realize that I was one of 96 million Americans that had diagnosed or undiagnosed prediabetes. And we're talking 18 years of age or older. We're not talking about, you know, the quarter of a million or almost a third of a million diabetes cases in the youth, but we're talking 18 years old or older. So adults here in the US, 96 million prediabetes and 38 million full-blown type 2 diabetes. So
wow,
that is a lot of people.
Yeah, that's like 40% of the people. I mean, that's a huge proportion. And I was in that group too. And so many of those aren't even diagnosed yet, especially on the prediabetes side. Like numbers starting to tick up, right? Blood pressure starting to go up, triglycerides getting out of whack, all that kind of stuff, right?
So you mentioned as we were prepping for this one, metabolic syndrome. And there was an article that we were reading, you know, metabolic syndrome. So the basics of metabolic syndrome, you're going to look at, it's going to be diagnosed as three or more, right, of the clustering of at least three of the five medical conditions with abdominal obesity, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, high serum triglycerides, and low serum HDL, right? And the article or the research article was saying that, yeah, these are undiagnosed. Like these don't have a lot of check engine lights on a day-to-day basis that are showing up unless you're testing your blood sugar, you know, measuring your waist, testing your blood pressure, right? These are things that creep up over the years that sometimes pop up on a yearly physical or not.
Yeah, easily undetectable because they're oftentimes symptom-free. That's the real trouble because that's where I was, where it was like, you know, sometimes there was a number that was out of whack, but not really a symptom to go along with it. Like no check engine light, like you said.
Right. Now, there will be some check engine lights, right? Like the tight waistline or the brain fog or the decreased libido or
cravings
or, you know, always hungry, right?
Constantly on a diet. That was, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a big one.
The interesting thing recently, and we're going to talk about kind of a timeline here throughout the episode as well, but the metabolic syndrome is also sometimes called insulin resistant syndrome. So when we're looking at metabolic syndrome, it's that group of conditions, right, that raise your risk. So why does this matter? Why do those numbers that we shared with you just a few minutes ago matter? Because metabolic syndrome, if you have three of those five things, right, that are insidious, that just kind of lurk beneath the surface, right? Like iceberg. And then all of a sudden, boom, you've got a diagnosis.
Yeah.
They increase your risk of coronary heart disease, diabetes, stroke, and other serious health related issues, certain cancers, certain fertility issues, PCOS. So metabolic syndrome is also that insulin resistant syndrome. So fasting and insulin, right? If the downstream effect is bad, poor blood sugar and a diagnosis of prediabetes or diabetes, the controlling hormone is insulin.
Yeah.
So these symptoms are directly related to insulin resistance. And that's why when we see this article that pops up on Cleveland Clinic, right, and it says how to reverse prediabetes, and they mention fasting, I was like, woo, yeah, like ring the bell. All right, no longer in the fringe. So we're going to dive into it and kind of unpack what they recommend and push back on a couple of things and give a little bit perspective on it. But the reality is that there's a big disconnect between those statistics that we shared metabolic syndrome and how it increases your chances of disease and mortality, right? And then what the recommendations are now starting to become when it comes to fasting and dietary, or more importantly, lifestyle changes.
Yeah, and that's how the article begins too. Lifestyle changes like diet and exercise can help. And that's a big one. That's good perspective, because
that's powerful.
Yeah, it really is, because you know it really does come down to lifestyle. But more importantly, it's like, what am I actually going to be able to do day to day? Because even if I get the weight off or reverse it, can I maintain what I did to actually get there? Or will I revert back to my own mean, like my own internal thermostat, if you will, my self-image? Like, do I revert back to previous habits? So like, how do I find something sustainable that I can do and maintain and keep doing over time, keep doing what's working and stick with it? Because that's also mentioned in the article too. We'll go over that later.
Yeah. So I love the perspective, first of all, that you have a choice, right? And we've started to see some changes on like diabetes.org in their food slow recommendations, changes, right? We just did a recent podcast episode on the use of the cyclical ketogenic diet in recently diagnosed and overweight type 2 diabetics, and how a 90-day cycle made dramatic changes in their fasting insulin, their HbA1c's, their blood sugar numbers, their weight loss, et cetera.
You don't have to do it forever.
You don't have to do it forever, right? But not even the whole keto diet, because they do mention this here in the article. We'll share one that we don't agree with. But they did mention that one of those lifestyle changes would be adopting a diet that works for you, right? Mm-hmm. Well, fasting works across all lifestyle. It doesn't matter how you like to eat, what you like to eat. If you're vegan, vegetarian, carnivore, low carb, high protein, Whole30, paleo, you can really use fasting to fit that lifestyle component. So we're starting to see this shift, right? This is why I brought this up. And there's a disconnect. We're going to be doing an episode here coming up in the near future about outdated, unsubstantiated food, USDA, FDA food guidelines and recommendations.
Yep.
And how they're really setting us up for failure. And there's a lot of conflicting information, outdated information, et cetera. But one of the articles that I was, you know, as we always continue to try to talk through research articles and bring you actionable stuff when it comes to metabolic health, blood sugar, diabetes, et cetera, and apply it to the fasting lifestyle. There was an article recently out of the Journal of Human Nutrition and Diet in 2022, right? Mm-hmm. So this is like really recent stuff. And they were looking at the effects of carbohydrate restriction in the management of glycemia in type 2 diabetics, right? Okay. And they openly admit that there's this confounded multiple factorial type problem where, you know, calorie restriction, the amount of it, dietary protein, there's no clear definition of low carb.
Sure.
But the interesting thing about this was a funded article. And I don't know the intention. I don't know all of the authors. I haven't spoken to them. But reading it, I found it interesting that they aim to provide insight into the relationships between carb restriction and glycemia by testing the effect of varying doses of carbohydrates on CGMs. So continuous glucose levels.
Yeah.
But the problem is, it seemed promising, but the outcome was that like there was no real outcome, which was odd. Well, not really. After you look at it, that it was 6 days, it was eucaloric dietary treatment. So they were really trying to like maintain the weight,
balance, right?
Yeah, the energy balance or the weight of the individual. But they use such a tiny carbohydrate amount. So 10 to 30% of your carbohydrate. The recommended daily, right? If you look at, that's why I mentioned the podcast episode we're going to be recording in the future, right?
Yeah.
Recommends 45 to 65% or 800, 900, I'm not good at math on the fly, 800 or 900 calories all the way up to 1300 calories coming from carbohydrates on a given day. So I really would have loved them to study the higher end versus the lower end, because we know
true life.
Yeah. The more true application to the situation that we have, which is the statistics that we just shared, which is 90% of Americans eat too much sugar, 45 to 65% of your calories come from the carbohydrate, right? Which we know is the biggest insulin spiker, which leads to those statistics that we shared, right? But it's like, okay, well, this is the research that's still be putting out. It seems a little misguided or misdirected, right? Now, maybe there's an underlying more higher level physiological thing that they were looking at that, you know, above my pay grade. I totally could possibly understand that.
Yeah.
The interesting thing is, though, is that that Cleveland Clinic article kind of reinvigorated my excitement that, okay, even though this article just came out in 2022, doesn't really seem to prove much, or it doesn't seem to be an applicable study for something that we would want to talk about. Like, yeah, it doesn't really, didn't really prove anything. The How to Reverse Prediabetes article that was in the diabetes and endocrinology portion of the Cleveland Clinic actually aligned with a lot of the things that we teach and we live.
Wow. Great point. I love that perspective, because if you think about it too, that article almost does kind of highlight something that we support, which is the fact that splitting hairs between the difference of extreme carb restriction, you know, going from 10% of your daily calories up to 30% is not making a difference. So if you are extremely carb restricted, maybe don't worry so much about the very tiny difference between that, because a lot of people that we've talked to actually, you know, can kind of paint themselves into a corner with carb restriction too. And that's why we've done episodes on that. So, but I love the promising
specifically
fact.
What you're saying there is the long-term effect of low carb diets on diabetics has been shown not to work.
Yeah. And this is just another highlight of that, right?
Right. A much smaller time-wise sample of it, but So let's not get caught up into that small minutia.
Yeah.
Cause this was not a representative, you know, situational type study where we're looking at 96 million Americans with prediabetes and close to 40 million Americans with already diagnosed diabetes, with a 50% guaranteed rate that those pre-diabetics are going to end up diabetics, right? So we're adding another almost 50 million Americans in the next 5 to 10 years, which we didn't talk about, right? Which was the cost component of this.
Wow.
Right?
Like how many of those 100 million are actually this carb restricted right now? Like how applicable is that, right?
Yeah, right. And it's cool to see that the ADA is changing, right? Mm. So we're starting to see some changes. The cost associated with it too is staggering. $327 billion for the diagnosed cases of diabetes in 2017. Wow. 237 of that was direct medical cost. $90 billion was reduced productivity. 2.3 times higher the medical cost per year per individual if you're diagnosed with diabetes. So we're talking about a lifestyle change, right? Which is the starting point of how to reverse prediabetes. This article, lifestyle changes like diet and exercise can help.
Yeah.
I really want to push a little bit farther into this and just not say prediabetes, the reversal, but full-blown diabetes reversal.
Wow. Absolutely.
If this works for prediabetes, why wouldn't it work? Right. Oh, wait, it does. But yeah, I just... So the next article should say how to reverse diabetes and just copy and paste everything that's in this one.
Right. Just be a little more patient, right?
Yeah.
Continue the process a little longer. Right. So, you know, I love how it starts off, but this is great. People who have prediabetes have up to a 50% chance of developing type 2 diabetes within 5 to 10 years. That can be hard to admit to yourself, where my blood work that's a little bit off might eventually lead here. But that's just how it goes. But it's not a done deal. These steps you can take to prevent it from happening. And early intervention is absolutely key. So the earlier that we can get started on this process, the better. So yesterday was better than today, but today is better than waiting until tomorrow, for sure.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, the simplest way to undo the diabetes, the slippery slope of blood sugar issues is to reduce the source and not worry so much about that. What's the carbohydrate number? What's the blood sugar number? But really look at, okay, the upstream. So what is controlling this? Well, it's insulin and insulin's effectiveness, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting knowledgeable or asking for help or finding out like, okay, what is fasting? What is insulin? How are they related? And that's where fasting has been so powerful, especially for you and I, Tommy, in our journey. It was we were doing all of the other stuff. We were reading the research. We had medical backgrounds, you know, clinical practice for years. I was helping other people lose weight, but could not figure out why my numbers, my metabolic syndrome numbers, were still ticking up. And I was doing a lot of the right things with the right intention and the right time and dosage. So the education and the knowledge is important, but then you have to act on it too, right? So the easiest thing, the best thing you want to do is get the weight off. Right? The insulin resistant syndrome, the metabolic syndrome, the obesity, the increased risk factor. get that weight off. And the easiest way to decrease the insulin, is to stop feeding the monster.
Yeah.
Right? You got a monster under the bed, don't feed it snacks. Okay. Right. Evict the thing. All right. So simply getting consistent with those fasting windows, which is one of the things, one of the first resources we made, you can get it on the website. We'll email it to you. It is the fast start guide, right? It's how to put one meal a day fasting, not the intermittent window, not the 16-hour window, but a 20 to 22-hour window where you're going to really see that insulin come down and allow your body to shed the glycogen and really start tapping into those fat stores and burn through some fat pretty quickly.
Yeah, which is what we need to do. We need to take off some of those fat cells. We need to shrink them up so we can balance the havoc that they're causing. And then when we take it from there, then the next question that we usually get is something like, well, what should I eat whenever I do break my fast? And so then we need to talk about adopting a healthy diet and what that actually looks like, right?
Yeah, the word diet, man, not my favorite, right?
There's
so many connotations that come with it, right? Skeletons in my closet. So many of you that we talk to and you email us or you're part of the challenges and you're with us or you're in the VIP experience coaching group, like, there's so many times where we'll ask, okay, what have you tried before with success or with failure? And it's, you can list all the big names out there and I'm not going to list it now, but all the big name weight loss programs or just like, you know, weight loss in a box type stuff, right?
Right.
There's this, you know, overconsumption, convenience, food supply, you know, palatability. We've done episodes on all the stuff, the processed carbohydrates versus the natural, how much. Are any carbs good for us? Well, the cool thing is that our body is intuitively smart. So if we're putting some intention into the lifestyle and we're looking and beginning with the end in mind, well, we can start making better decisions with the information that we have, right? So if you can reverse pre-diabetes, it's not a stretch to say you can reverse diabetes.
Yeah.
If you're fasting for 12 hours, it's not a stretch to say you can fast for 16, right? So if you're making certain food choices today, like you said, you can make slightly better or different, not even better, just different food choices. Let's stop labeling it good or bad.
Right.
Different food choices tomorrow and see what happens. See what your blood sugar number does. See what the scale does. See how you feel. Right.
Yeah.
So it's that lifestyle adaptation, right? Fasting for life. We named it that for a reason because our lives were restored to us when we started to fast and lose the weight and get control over the relationship with food and get our blood metrics in check, right? So that food component is so powerful.
Yeah, because like whatever you decide to put on your plate, if what you do to actually lose the weight or to restore the balance that you need, if that looks too different from what you're actually going to be able to sustain over a long period of time, it's not going to stick. There's going to be this tendency to revert. That's why we see 95% of people who get a significant amount of weight off, they don't keep it off. They revert back. So what did the 5% do differently? They found something that they could actually sustain for a long period of time. So like extreme caloric or carbohydrate restriction, or like just taking away whole like large food groups and things like that, that tends not to work. So we have to find something that we can actually adapt for fat loss and then for health and weight maintenance long term. And that's why the article says the most important thing is that you're able to adhere to whatever healthy eating style you pick, period. That's the definition of lifestyle. And that's why we named our challenges the Fasting Lifestyle Challenge. It's exactly that, because that's where the magic happens right there.
Right, 100%. And I know there was a specific quote from here too that you wanted to share, right? Because it stopped you in your tracks, right? So when we're looking at this, I love that under the adopt a healthy diet, or let's put lifestyle in there, right?
Yeah.
It mentions things like intermittent fasting and the keto diet and the Mediterranean diet. And there's research that supports the cyclical ketogenic study was incredibly powerful, right? Yeah. That we had already mentioned. The fact that intermittent fasting is even listed here,
right?
Like it's awesome, right? Yeah. So how do you make it stick is what we're talking about. How do you adopt it into that lifestyle through that repetition? You know, there was another interesting quote in here that says, let's say I ask you to consume 1400 calories a day. If you just consume 1400 calories of candy, that's probably not going to be helpful for your blood sugar.
Right.
Right. So there are some better choices that we can be making.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like eliminating those sugary foods, the baked stuff, the candies, the fruit juice, you know, soft drinks, you know, all that kind of stuff. What do you normally say?
This.
Like the desserts for breakfast.
Right.
That's basically what they are. Right. But That's the thing about it is like, if I put on extra weight, if the way that I got here now involved those things, then maybe it's not going to be super easy to just cut away everything all at once. I'm going to need to get there, you know, kind of with a plan. And like, just even if you like go download the Fast Start Guide and get started and you've never fasted before, don't try to correct everything all at once, really.
Yeah, that
right?
guide does not talk about any of this stuff. It literally just tells you to pick a window and eat the same meal every day for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, I know.
And see what happens. Okay? Like, yeah. That's it.
And then after that, you know, put some reps under your belt and then do another one. You know, like do something else. That's exactly where lifestyle magic, you know, kind of comes in. That's how we get these things to stick. Like, whatever you're doing, whatever healthy eating style, like make it stick, make it something that you can sustain.
Yeah. And there's a few other things that we talk a lot about in here as well. So there's a lot of alignment. The one thing I don't agree with here is the DASH diet, right?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. Okay. Moving on. It mentions, you know, moving, right? It mentions, you know, learning how to read nutrition labels, right? Get movement into your day to make sure you're focusing on sleep, because we know what cortisol does. We just recorded an episode about cortisol and high blood sugar numbers in the morning and dawn phenomenon, right? But always making sure that you have support in these as well. We joke around, the first two rules of fasting are don't talk about fasting and don't talk about fasting. Right. If you're new and you tell somebody you're fasting, they're like, what? You get some pretty crazy like responses. If somebody's not familiar with the true essence of what an intermittent fasting lifestyle is. And this doctor in this article mentions like, yeah, you want to start with a caloric deficit. You want to make these different changes. You want to X, Y, and Z. And I agree with the majority of them, but we can stack the deck even greater in our favor by applying those fasting principles, but beginning with the lifestyle in mind is really the most powerful thing that we see when we have our 7-day lifestyle challenges.
Yeah.
Is that we're going to be building habits, stacking those habits that allow you to kind of zoom out into the bigger picture rather than worrying about counting the calorie, tracking the macro, what's my carbohydrate percentage, even the DASH diet. Am I getting too much sodium or too little sodium? In our, you know, recommendation, probably a little bit too little of the right sodium.
Yeah.
If you're trying to reduce your blood pressure, right? And more importantly, you're gonna feel that almost that whoosh, but it's gonna be that emotional whoosh where you're gonna feel differently about what it is that you're doing. Because if you've started a lifestyle change, notice I didn't use the other word.
Yeah.
That willpower wears off after a certain while.
Sure.
Life jumps up and nips you in the bud and's like, hey, I'm here. Like, don't forget about me. Don't forget about your plan. Right. And then we typically forget about the plan, because I don't believe that we start with the end in mind of that lifestyle component of what you want the end, your day to day end result to look like. Because if you tell me I got to track and weigh for the rest of my life, I'm out.
Yeah. I'm not doing it. Right. If I can't see what that looks like at the end goal, even if I like how I feel to get there, but if I can't see myself maintaining that, then all of a sudden, like your BS radar goes off. And then it starts to be like, well, that doesn't feel like an effective method. And then you start to get less excited about it and less motivated to do it. And then that can really sap the discipline or the willpower or whatever it is else that you're using to kind of push yourself to the next step. That's why we really have to like build the habits that start to gravitationally like pull me towards the right action rather than feel like I'm clawing my way to get it right.
Yeah. Pushing the boulder up the hill.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. So I love it. I was super pumped to see it. I'm going to send them a message and say, okay, can we write this exact same article, but just say how to reverse diabetes.
Yeah.
Right. And they do mention medications and, you know, doctors, you know, making sure you have the right team. So if you're looking for support, if you're looking for people that you can talk to fasting about, if you're ready to have a breakthrough or plateau, you know, learn how to fast more than 16 or 18 hours, learn how to make this fun and easier and more of a lifestyle adaptation rather than just starting another diet on Monday, then the challenge is coming up on October 26th is absolutely the right time and the right place. This episode has been magically zoomed to your device. You're listening to it for a reason. So we would love to see you sign up for that. You can go to the show notes, click the link, get more details, dates, and more information there. Yeah. But as we wrap up today, Tommy, I want to make sure that you know, there's one or two things that we can actionably do, because we kind of meandered around the conversation today. But that's what happens when I get excited about it, where I'm like, ooh, they mentioned fasting. Let's go talk about that.
Yeah.
Is staying consistent with it. So if you have not downloaded the Fast Start Guide, go to the website, thefastingforlife.com. You can download it, put one meal a day fasting into your day-to-day life. Join the Facebook community. You can go to the Facebook group, be around like-minded individuals. And I'm going to encourage you, if you've been listening for a while and you're in the group and you're looking to level up, it's challenge time. I'm speaking directly to you. Let's go. We only got two more left before the end of the year. The holidays are upon us. If you've been to a major box store lately and the Christmas decorations are out and the Halloween costumes and candy is everywhere.
Oh, man.
Let's set this fourth quarter up for the best fourth quarter yet for you, your friends, insulate your family, yourself. Your loved ones. Insulate yourself. So I'm pumped up, Tommy. I'm excited. We started with those statistics in the beginning. We want to end on a positive note. You have the option to make a choice. You have the option to choose a different path. And now the Cleveland Clinic is even telling you that you should be fasting. And maybe you should do a 90-day trial of the ketogenic diet too. But anyway, we do not judge whichever lifestyle you choose, but we want to support you along the way, Tommy. So thank you for the conversation today, sir. And we'll talk soon.
Cool. Thank you. Bye.
So you've heard today's episode and you may be wondering, where do I start? Head on over to thefastingforlife.com and sign up for our newsletter, where you'll receive fasting tips and strategies to maximize results and fit fasting into your day-to-day life.
While you're there, download your free Fast Start Guide to get started today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to leave us a 5-star review, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Fasting for Life.